Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.
It's here, Football Weekly Extra. Today, FA Cup, Notts County down Wigan. Defoe hotter than DeMarcus Beasley's motor as Spurs beat Leeds. While in London, there's the biggest palace surprise since Prince Edward brought home a girlfriend, courtesy of Danny Butterfield. Meantime, in the Premier League, Portsmouth continue to drop faster than Terry's shorts. But here comes their fourth owner of the season. Will this one make things any better? There's your post, our annual report on the SPL, and a look forward to a whopping weekend in the Premier League with Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool, Everton, Wigan, Sunderland. Who slipped that one in? All of that in today's Football Weekly Extra. Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us. On board today, John Ashdown.
Hi, James.
Barry Glendening.
Hello.
And Kevin McCara.
Hi, James.
Hi to you all. Fascinating few days of midweek action we've been having. Of course, the FA Cup, I mentioned there, Jermaine Defoe, powering Spurs past Leeds. Spurs don't often get past the fourth round. It's a good result for them ahead of this big game against Aston Villa.
It was a great cup tie, actually. Tottenham absolutely battered Leeds for sort of 70, 75 minutes of the game. Scored one, should have had a sort of five or six in the opening half hour. But once they did score, then Leeds kicked into gear, were brilliant themselves for sort of 10, 15 minutes, nicked one just before half-time. And then after, you know, the second half started as the first half had started, and eventually Defoe romped to his hat-trick.
Mm.
But he should have, I mean, you know, it looks good, but he should have had more, really.
Yeah. Well, there you go. 20 goals now, I think, for the season, is it?
Yeah, I think it was his third hat-trick of the season as well, which is pretty special.
Very special, very special. Meantime, you mentioned Palace. Extraordinary business with Danny Butterfield there. He scored, my notes suggest, seven goals since 2002, and he came up with three in 6 minutes.
Yeah, I watched this game as well. He's a fullback, and he was basically playing as sort of a right-sided,
an emergency striker.
Striker, basically, yeah. They sort of play a 4-5-1, which he was on that wide of the five, which turns into a three as they go forward. And yeah, I mean, when
who let Jonathan Wilson in?
And you know, I've seen Palace dozens of times, and he's never ever looked
right
like scoring one. Never mind three.
Right, and we missed an absolute sitter on the weekend as well.
Oh, did you? I didn't see that.
But since they've gone into administration, they're flying. Fantastic stuff.
Well, they've won two out of two.
Yeah.
They?
Yeah. Good for them.
But it's great. I mean, it was one of those sort of, it must have been quite a bizarre and surreal night at Selhurst, because he quite clearly couldn't believe it. He couldn't stop smiling afterwards and sort of was wondering quite what had gone on.
The thing was, it was a perfect hat trick as well, one with his head and one with each foot. So it's definitely one for the show reel and to show his grandkids whenever he has them. He might have them already. I really don't know anything about his private life.
Right.
But, yeah, it's good for Palace in that... Pardon?
He may not know. Well, he's a footballer. Isn't
yeah,
he?
That's true.
Yeah. But, sorry, anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I'd say Palace's administrator will be upset now because if he'd done it, say, last week, they could have sold him for millions.
Right.
The worry now is that he'll sort of fall into that difficult Paul Warhurst sort of situation where nobody quite knows whether he's a defender or a striker, and then he ends up being not really either.
Well, the administrator will be cheered by the fact that they got Villa at home in the fifth round, which apparently is going to bring in about $500,000 of the sorely needed Sterling. What does this say about Wolves? Was it just that they weren't particularly bothered, or their priorities are elsewhere?
There's an element of that. The defending was pretty slack on all the goals, but Palace were the better team all the way through, really. Yeah, I think there was a bit of a lack of application there. They perhaps didn't fancy it on
a
big night in South London.
Okay, well, Spurs will be playing Bolton in the next round. Notts County will be away to Fulham after they defeated Wigan. What's happened to Wigan? Nobody saw it. John, not even you saw it.
It wasn't on the telly, so I couldn't.
It wasn't on the telly. Have to say, rarely have I seen you begin the pod with so much enthusiasm.
Usually I'm the one that's sat there quietly twiddling my thumbs waiting.
No, but I think I know the reason why. John, you brought in your lunch, which is a homemade pork stew, and you've got it sitting here. So you know that the sooner you get this pod wrapped up,
the quicker we rattle through it, I can get into my lentils
and fired up.
Peppers. Yeah, there's a bit of, what's that red stuff? Paprika. Don't I mean paprika.
Yeah, spice.
Sort of smoked Spanish paprika in there. That's the That's the little.
Perhaps you'd like to give us the recipe in part three.
No, I didn't have to. No, it was just some roast pork that was left over from the weekend.
Yeah. Right. Okay. The recipe. So you just basically slung that. What did you do? Fry a bit of what? Garlic with paprika first of all, and then.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say he had no part.
No, he made it. Himself.
No, this is the thing that I made. Yeah, I even roasted. But it was slow roasted pork that we bought. Shoulder at the weekend and I cooked it for 12 hours on Sunday. Right. And then Monday, Tuesday, chopped up a bit of onion, garlic,
right.
Paprika.
Fried that.
Peppers, yeah. Lentils, bit of passata.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Out of a bottle, though?
Well,
yeah. But, I mean, you slow roast the pork. That's quality. There you go. Now, in other news... right, okay, Notts County, amazing stuff for them, eh? No,
well, they very nearly did it in the first game, didn't they? Weren't they 2-0 mm-hmm. up in the first game?
They
and
did.
This time there was no way back for Wigan. It's a strange one. They're struggling in the league as well. Is it no wins since 1-10, something like that?
Well, we'll talk about Wigan later on, of course, because they've got what could be a very big game for them and Sunderland coming up on the weekend in the Premier League. Meantime, a couple of Premier League games that took place during the week. Of course, Fulham beating Portsmouth 1-0. Portsmouth all over the headlines this morning. They've got a new owner after Bahram Chanrai seized control of the club. This is exciting, from Ali Al-Faraj, basically on the, because the club was secured against loans that Chanrai had made, and since the loans weren't paid back, he then took over ownership of the club. The lucky man. Fourth owner of the season. Has this one got any money? Is it going to make any difference at all? Let's ask our expert on Pompey's bizarre and murky financial situation, Jamie Jackson. Hello, Jamie.
Hello
there. Well, you wrote a full and frank article about this latest ownership change at Portsmouth for The Guardian. Can you just spell it out for us? It's not as such that much of a change, is it?
No. I mean, it means that Chanrai is now the one basically giving the orders rather than Mark Jacob and Daniel Azugi. Mark Jacob being the executive director and Daniel Zugi being an Israeli lawyer who was in charge of kind of raising day-to-day finance. Now Bahram Chanrai...
The one who's been in prison for fraud and false accounting.
He has indeed in Israel.
Right. Okay, so Chanrai is now in charge. Does this make any... Is this good news for Portsmouth fans?
Well, because it's Portsmouth, wait and see is probably the best answer to that. But I don't think it's going to be necessarily... any worse news than what's been going on. And my gut feeling is, yeah, it's better news.
Right. He's a former associate, is he not, of Gaidamax Senior?
Yes, this is interesting. It's quite difficult to get precise information out of Israel, but from what I understand, he was once in business with Arkady Gaidamax, but then that broke down the relationship, and he and Levi Kushner, a chap called Levi Kushner, who also he's in business with now, who... is part of Portpin, the company that now has control of Portsmouth. They took Arkady Gaidamax to court and won quite serious damages him.
Were the damages that they won not then the money that was invested, or it was the same sum as the sum that was then invested shortly afterwards into Portsmouth, which has now led to him taking control of the club when it wasn't paid back?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the rumours. I personally am unsure about whether there's any connection there. The sum might be similar, but whether it's more than a coincidence, I really...
It's a dangerous legal... all right. So, anyway, it's not a case of a knight in shining armour riding in and ready to resolve all Portsmouth's problems, put it that way.
Well, I think it might be, just because he wants his money back, and so the best way... of doing that is for him to take control and kind of make sure that he can direct the club towards that goal. So I don't think it's certainly not in his interest to take the club into administration or see the club go into administration. And possibly or arguably, that might have been what he thought was occurring before he intervened.
Jamie, it's Kevin McCarra. As you know, we whiled away the hours coming back from Hull discussing Portsmouth yesterday. Getting away from all the complexities and who owns what, isn't it basically whoever owns it, it's a crisis for them because they're going to get relegated. The squad they've got probably would struggle to get back up, and the ground is small and doesn't create revenue. Why did anyone ever think in the first place Portsmouth were a good investment? I mean, judging by things like crowd capacity and ground, it's a very bad investment.
It's a very good question, Kevin. The only answer I can give is that because of where it is, South Coast, the catchment area, and because of you know, the sort of small ground that you mentioned, maybe the thought is, or the idea is, that you know, you can expand. There is scope there to expand, to you know, to sort of bring in more fans, etc., etc. But it's the only ground in the Premier League that doesn't have a hospitality box, for example. But yeah, I mean, you're right. You know, from what I understand, Avram Grant has real concerns that if they go down, they will, you know, this season, they will go down again and end up at least League One. So, you know, it's a bit of a very sort of difficult situation.
I think a lot of fans, on a very sort of general point, are wondering is how on earth, you know, given Palace's situation last week, how on earth have Portsmouth stayed out of administration so far?
Well, I mean, maybe just because of timing. The winding up petition is due to be heard on Wednesday. They're appealing that, and that hearing has to be heard before Wednesday. So it may well happen, you know, on Wednesday, if not before. But you know, this is why Shamrai has stepped in, because he can see that possibly happening.
But should he not have done that before? Maybe when the transfer window was still open, and he could secure the players, or at least keep hold of the players that might keep Portsmouth up.
Well, from what I understand, there was quite a lot of disinformation flying around, certainly in his direction. And I think, you know, having got to the bottom of that or understood that situation, you know, that's why he's acted now.
Right,
Jamie. Does a small part of you die now every time you take a call from the office asking you to write another article about Portsmouth?
Interesting question.
And a diplomatic, interesting silence as an answer. I just.
If I'm honest, it's quite good fun, because it is, you know, it's a bit like the John Terry story. You could make it up, but, you know, it's sort of, it is quite ridiculous, some of the things. And there's also obviously a lot of stuff which I couldn't speak about now, you know, you, as you'll understand, going on in the background, which is, you know, let's say, interesting. And some of that might come out later. So, you know, it's been good fun. You know, it probably is reaching its natural life in terms of, you know, the club itself is probably going to go down, and then after that, you know, we'll have to wait and see.
Right. I'd say there are even more cock-ups in this story than possibly the John Terry affair.
Yes, yeah. Probably is. Yeah.
Jamie, that's fascinating. Thank you so much for that. And no doubt further revelations are yet to come down on the South Coast, but thanks for explaining that so ably.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Chelsea-Arsenal. Now, Hull held table-topping Chelsea to a 1-1 draw at the KC Stadium on Tuesday night and fought valiantly. Kevin, can Arsenal do this too?
Well, going back to the game at Hull, I mean, it's quite counterintuitive. You bring back Drogba, you know, teams nearly back to full strength, and they're a pretty bad game. Anelka didn't seem to enjoy having a secondary role and having to play a bit wider and so on than he did when Drogba was away. And they deserved a draw, but no more than that. Hull were certainly worth a point from that game.
Hmm.
I suppose Ancelotti always tries to be quite blasé, and he was saying, oh, well, you know, it's good to be 2 points ahead, but they were a lot better off than that. I mean, they should be doing better than that.
Mm. Once again, a goal from a set piece, that's now the 15th goal out of the 20 they conceded, 75%, therefore.
Do you think, Kevin, the circus surrounding Chelsea at the moment is going to, or had, or is going to have an effect on their performance on the field?
I don't think so. I was going to say, one of the things he's done is sometimes he plays Alex and sometimes he plays Carvalho. And, I mean, you're not sure what your best centre-half pairing is. That suggests a problem. Mm. Because, I mean, most managers would say that you must establish these basics in your team before you do anything else. And I think that's now in question at Chelsea.
Chelsea do have that extraordinary record at Stamford Bridge, but the Gunners won this fixture 2-1. Last season. Is there any hope, John Ashdown, for those chasing Chelsea at the top, and Arsenal fans, of course, that they could do the same again this time?
There's a little, because they did, of course, bounce back after that defeat to Chelsea back in the the autumn. Though,
not the best of signs, though, is
no,
it? Being 3-0 at home, was it?
And also the game against United last weekend suggests that against the two big crunch matches they've had, they've really been given sort of footballing lessons, really. So yeah, I'm not particularly optimistic for their chances this weekend.
Mm. I mean, there's this obvious vulnerability. You see a Man U almost on kickoff going for cliche, taking huge advantage down that side, with Nani having an outstanding game. And any Arsenal fan will say the defence is troubled because they don't have a good enough goalkeeper.
It's interesting in that both teams are kind of on the rebound from not very good results. Mm. So both are going to have a point to prove. So I'm going for a draw.
Mm. Liberal expat says, what on earth has happened to Walcott? Far from being brought along and improving his confidence under Wenger, he seems to be going backwards. He looked rubbish on Sunday, adds Liberal expat.
He did indeed, and in many other games.
Yeah, well, you're just coming back from injury.
Yeah, and injuries can shake your confidence as a young player. I think it does take a while to get back that yard. There's a yard of pace and a yard comes with confidence as well, I think.
It's hard to imagine he's the same player from Zagreb and so on with England. It was so direct, knew what he was doing. He just seems to not know where to... Sometimes he tries to play like a winger. It's not very effective, not centre-forward. It doesn't seem to be anything in particular. It doesn't have a real identity at the moment as a football player.
And you can tell how far he's regressed because the commentators in the Leeds-Tottenham game last night were championing David Bentley's claims for the England right-sided midfield spot.
What has happened that David Bentley is now suddenly back in the Spurs side?
Yeah, I think he's played three games, made three starts.
And played well, no?
Yeah, apparently so. Yeah, he was very good last night. Although he was against, a League One left-back, obviously, who was playing out of position.
And he's got great hair.
Oh, he's got horrible hair. Awful,
David Bentley's hair, Kevin? Where do you stand on that, Tony?
I thought that's why they weren't playing him.
Right. He looks like an 18th century coach driver or something.
Right.
I think he'd look good in a sort of a three-cornered hat, like...
All right.
Dick Turpin type character.
Interesting. Very good. That is it for part one, but part two has all sorts of excitements, including our look at the SPL. Yes, it's that time of year again. And other stuff too, like your posts.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.
All right, now. England's John Terry, not the only footballer in the news for using his chopper this week. Robinho making a spectacular helicopter-assisted entrance to his new club and his old club, of course, Santos. The young Brazilian stepping out of the helicopter with arm-in-arm with Pelé, of course, former Santos legend himself. So they're all friends again now, I presume, because you remember before Pelé had made some ill-advised comments about young players like Robinho are all high on drugs all the time and they need help. And then Robinho got a bit upset and threatened him with legal action. But hey, they're all friends again now, I believe.
Seems to be, yeah. It was quite a bizarre
lovely
scene,
wasn't it? Yeah.
Helicopter. The clip that I saw on YouTube, he comes out of the helicopter and then he starts walking across the pitch, waving and things. And you think, nothing's surreal about this. This is all
well, fun. But there's large people dressed as fish.
All of a sudden, this killer whale comes flapping across the screen.
Santos are known as Pesce, the fish.
It's incredible.
But
it's
their really mascot fun. Is a whale.
Right.
That's the one of very few things I know about Santos.
All right.
And a whale, as we all know, is not a fish. No, it's a mammal.
It's a mammal. Mm. But that wasn't the only strange thing about the presentation, of course. There was also his really rubbish attempt at keepy-uppies.
Yeah, he ended up booting it into the crowd, like sort of Avit style. Yeah.
And then he got up on stage with Charlie Brown Jr. and did a kind of reggae sing-along.
Charlie Brown Jr.
That's correct, yeah. Lovely. All well and good, but of course it was rather put in the shade by the spectacular arrival of Robbie Keane at Celtic. You must have been very excited by this, Kevin. Were you one of the thousands of Celtic fans who were there at midnight?
You spotted me in a photograph, didn't you?
Yeah.
No, quite definitely not. I find the Celtic fans, this is very insular. Has it crossed Celtic fans' minds that Spurs are trying to mention top four in the Champions League and yet feel there's no benefit to be had for keeping Robbie Keane on the books? Robbie Keane is certainly a good player and maybe he'll revive at Celtic, but anyone who's watched him on his occasional appearances for Spurs this season will know he's been having a very bad season.
Mm. And there were thousands of them there, though, at midnight.
Well, it used to start in the 1990s when we were trying to overthrow the board of that time and they'd protest outside the ground, and ever since then they've been willing to go. And it's like a nice big car park for them to stand
in.
That's the main thing.
Okay. Yes. Excellent. He said, this is a dream for me. It's no secret that I'm a Celtic fan. And I always wanted to play for them.
Can I just point out, I saw somebody taking the video of his arrival at Liverpool arrival at Celtic and putting his Liverpool speech on top of it, saying, I've always been a Liverpool fan.
Right.
No, he's allowed to be a Liverpool fan and a Celtic fan, but it was a bit repetitive. And things didn't turn out too well at Liverpool either.
No.
To be fair, Robbie, he's always been a boyhood fan of every club he's ever signed for, but he grew up in Talla in Dublin, which was kind of a poor area of Dublin, and it would not be uncommon for youths in the locale to ride around on their piebald pony wearing Celtic or Liverpool shirts.
Oh, okay.
You're more than permission to support both teams.
That's I think you should point out too that he's coming to a club that, if they aren't careful, could finish third in the SPL.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's...
extraordinary things going on up there in Scotland with Rangers running away with it. Celtic, 10 points behind, signing Robbie Keane and being rewarded with only the second game of the season they failed to score a goal in. about to be pit for second place, possibly by Hibs. Yeah. Sounds like it should be a good moment, with DeMarcus Beattie having car-related issues as well. it sounds like a good time to dial up our man in Glasgow, Ewan Murray. Hi, Ewan.
Hello.
Hello there, it's James.
James,
with
how
the...
are you?
Yes, I'm very well. How are you?
I'm fine. Long time no speak.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry about that. Every week we try and get an SPL thing in, but but Sean always...
Blame Sean.
Yeah. We beg him, but he just won't do it.
He won't. Kevin, how are you?
Not all right. So what's been happening since we last spoke in 2006?
In a nutshell?
In a nutshell. No, but it's extraordinary, isn't it? Celtic, was the Keane signing, is that in any way an attempt at closing the gap, or do you think the title race is over this year?
No, it is an attempt to close the gap. I mean, Tony Mowbray is overseeing a major transition and an overhaul of his squad, but in the case of Robbie Keane, a short-term deal and an expensive one, it is an act to try and bridge the gap to Rangers. The trouble is, and after Celtic's latest disaster on Tuesday night, it may be too little, too late.
Mm. Well, Keane, of course, playing in that. Do you think that over time and with a bit more training with his new teammates, he will prove an effective signing for them?
Yes, he should. And you know, I'm not naive enough to think that doesn't say more about the SPL than it does about Robbie Keane. But he will score a lot of goals up here, I would think. And you know, from Robbie Keane's point of view, he needs to play, and he'll certainly play every week here as long as he's fit. And he should score goals because, you know, to put it bluntly, the standard of defenders you'll face up here are nowhere near as high as what he would face in the Premier League in England.
Ewan, Robbie is a notoriously slow starter at clubs, which would sort of cause you to question the wisdom of signing him on a short-term deal because he may have to go back to London just as soon as he gets going and starts scoring goals.
Yeah, the only thing that I suppose would counteract that, as I've just said, is that he doesn't have too much to play against. He didn't look particularly sharp to me on Tuesday night. He missed three chances, maybe four if you're being harsh towards him. But he certainly looked like a guy, as he is, who hasn't had much game time. And you know, if Celtic had signed him in the beginning of January, it may be a different scenario. But of course, that wasn't possible, I would think, for a number of reasons. But you would hope that Tony Mowbray has taken that into account. And Tony Mowbray will hope, as I said, that because he's not playing against the strongest of teams, that even if he's not quite 100%, he'll still manage to grab a few goals.
We should mention Rangers. I mean, they're utterly broke and 10 points clear because they've kept the squad together and Walter Smith's a good manager. And that also puts extra pressure on Tony Mowbray.
I mean, Rangers are financially crippled, really. And that puts Celtic's troubles, you know, into sharper focus where Tony Mowbray is concerned, because the supporters... quite rightly, are saying, wait a minute, you know, we're not up against much here. Rangers haven't signed, they've signed one lone player in 18 months, and they can't add to their squad. Ironically, I think that's been a slight help to Rangers. It's brought their squad closer together. But Tony Mowbray's theory that, you know, and he has, what he did in January was quite spectacular. Eight players in, seven out. I mean, for a January transfer window, that's pretty radical. But he won't get away with doing that for too much longer. I have slight sympathy for him because I think that Gordon Strachan's team, if you believe in the evolution of teams and squads, it had really come to the end of its run and needed changed. But the point is, you know, up until last season in the Premier League, they were proven winners in Scotland, the players that were at Celtic. And to kind of bundle them out the door en masse and bring in players with no experience of this league, which he has done... It's quite a risk, and so far it's a risk that hasn't worked.
What do you think, Ewan? Is there a realistic chance that Hibs will put them to second and get into the Champions League?
Well, if you listen to Hibs manager John Hughes, he says absolutely no chance, which of course is blatant mind games. No, I don't think they will, just for the simple reason Hibs don't have the depth of squad. But their revival this season has been welcome. Anthony Stokes of Sunderland nightclub fame has been key to that, as has... Liam Miller, who left Celtic for Manchester United and has kind of lost his way since then, but he's been terrific for Hibs this season. And listen, it's great for all of us to have a meaningful third force challenging in the SPL, because it does become monotonous when there's the same two teams up there every year.
Mm, indeed so. Meantime, can you give us any further information on the extraordinary story of poor old DeMarcus Beasley and his car being set on fire?
No, other than we've been updated via DeMarcus's Twitter site, which isn't always a useful source of information.
Someone blew up my car, he said. I'm in the market for a new motor.
In the market for a new motor. He said he has to demonstrate some humour. Listen, the police themselves aren't yet sure exactly what's behind that, so I think it's probably risky to speculate. I mean, you know, we don't want people's cars being blown up in any walk of life, let alone football players.
Right, indeed so. Because they're unlikely to have a second set of wheels for a start. There hasn't been a campaign of blowing up footballers' cars in Glasgow, has there?
No, this is extreme. But what there has been, and what we can say, is there has been a spate of, you know, vandalism attacks on Rangers players' cars. Kyle Lafferty, Kenny Miller, Kevin Thompson, Al McGregor, the goalkeeper. They've had cars scratched and vandalised, so that has happened. But nowhere near as extreme as the case with Beasley, and it's to his credit, obviously, that he does seem to have accepted this in reasonable humour, if his Twitter is anything to go by, because I think it would scare the living daylights out of the rest of us.
Yeah, indeed so. Ewan, thank you very much indeed for that, and we look forward to speaking to you sooner.
No trouble. All the best.
Excellent. And to you too.
Bye-bye.
Fascinating stuff there from Glasgow. Let's see, one or two posts? Yeah, lots of people posting in with their John Terry jokes. I don't know if this is an appropriate forum for that kind of thing. Stuff like Ashley Cole was caught doing 104 miles per hour in a 50 mph zone. When questioned by police as to why he was speeding, he responded, "I've just heard John Terry's parked outside my house." That's from Totally Totty, Meerkat United. Wayne Bridge brought Vanessa Perroncella chocolate willy, but she says she prefers Terry's. No, I don't think we need that kind of thing. Larry Link's making a serious point. Do Sport Minister Jerry Sutcliffe's recent comments about the John Terry affair amount to political interference in Football Association affairs? If so, has he risked England's membership of FIFA?
It was asinine, wasn't it? What has he got to add to us? Nothing.
Nothing at all.
I mean, the whole Terry thing, it really doesn't matter who the England captain is, I think. The only way it could conceivably matter is that in the extremely unlikely event of England winning the World Cup, the image of the captain raising the trophy will become a very iconic image, and do you want him in it? But it's not really going to happen, is it?
I'm not sure taking the captaincy off and solves anything. Does that make everything
not
right?
In the slightest.
I don't understand it.
Marina Hyde nailed it today in her column, in which she compared the England captaincy to the role of the regimental goat. You know, that's it, really.
Right. Moving on. Lovejoy legend attempted to start a kind of meme about about a Bible 11. With names like Victor Moses, Jesus Navas. V. Senecal joined in saying all these biblical names, yet no mention of Congolese legend Bongo Christ. Men Call Me Phil then returned to the subject of John Terry, because he says he's currently getting crucified. I saw him doing pretty well with the cross at the weekend. I'm also pretty sure he'd prefer if his father's name didn't get mentioned in relation to people getting stoned. It's all starting to add up. Very, very good work there, Men Call Me Phil. But on a more serious note, Blunt Guardian says, question to the pod, German football magazine, his spelling, not mine, 11 Frund, has just published a ranking of the 50 toughest derbies. And he's basically sent in a shortened list with the top five and the British-ranked derbies. Basically, they say that number one in the world is Celtic Rangers. Toughest derby in the world. That's ahead of Olympic Piraeus, Panathinaikos Athens. Tell you what, the spelling's shocking on this. Fenerbahce Galatasaray in at third. Boca Juniors, as he has against River Plate. That's followed by CSK and then against Lusky Sofia. Millwall, the top ranked English derby. That's in at ninth place. Villa Birmingham, bizarrely, at 14th. Man U City, 32nd. 37th is Sunderland Newcastle, and then so on and so forth. Liverpool Everton, of course, coming up this weekend, only the 50th rank. What's your opinion on that?
Well, I thought it was a disgrace that the Sheffield derby was missing from at least the top two or three in that list.
Yeah? Is it? It's quite hardcore, is it, John?
Oh, well, yeah, of course it is, yeah. It's the big one. Joe Elliott, lead singer of Def Leppard, says there's no derby like it in the world. And well, then who are we to argue?
Yeah. Are they still active, Def Leppard?
The Leppard, yeah, I believe so.
Name drop ahoy. I once had a couple of pints with Joey Elliott.
Did you?
I did.
All right.
Very nice fella.
It's interesting that the City derbies don't matter so much in the North West. It's Man United versus Liverpool that matters.
Right.
I've gone beyond traditional City limits.
I can't believe that Shamrock Rovers against Shelburne is absent from that list.
I would like to see Catania against Palermo in there somewhere because, I mean, it's nothing nice about it, but deaths occur quite regularly in those games.
A row of limos and with blacked out glass out parked outside and people in suits with their
It's all
there.
A little bit more rough and ready than that. It's lumps of concrete being hurled at policemen and the like and police vans firebombed and all that kind of thing.
It's also quite odious, Celtic, I mean, just being number one because it's not about rivalry, it's about sectarianism.
Right.
I mean, it's to their disgrace that it's reckoned to be the most intense derby in the world in that sense.
Baron Matt says, question for Jim Boyle, Paolo. Does Okaka Chuka, who we discussed actually quite fully on Monday, but a lot of it didn't make the finished product. And
should take that as a sign, James, maybe.
Well, yeah. No, I think the Fulham fans will be interested, you know, what awaits them with Okaka Chuka. Did he receive the same kind of treatment from fans as Balotelli, which is, of course, the subject of this big kind of racist thing, and a lot of abuse from Juventus fans? No, in a word, although a lot of other players do, and there's been a big thing this week about a black Italian player being abused by a referee, which is really, really a nasty business. So yeah, it is an issue. It's not just about the fact that Balotelli is a chippy young man, and he certainly is a chippy young man. Further evidence of that came last night, actually, the Coppa Italia against Fiorentina, when Fiorentina were piling back down the Inter end and Balotelli neglected to go with them. And Mourinho started shouting at him, and he said something about, I picked up an injury, boss. And Mourinho said, it doesn't matter, you go back there and then you sort your injury out afterwards. There's some talk that it might have been a missing contact lens. I didn't know that Balotelli used contact lenses, but there you go. Anyway, Balotelli was so incensed that he threw his gloves on the ground. Mourinho brought him off, and he stormed off down the tunnel without saying anything to anyone. So the Balotelli excitements continue. Just on the subject of Italy, interesting to see Livorno, way down the bottom of the table, taking on Juventus in Zaccaroni's first proper game in charge. He's promised to go with three at the back, so I'd pile my cash on Livorno for that one. Also exciting that Milan, just after we spoke on Monday, picked up Amantino Mancini. Do you remember who scored that amazing step-over goal against Lyon for Roma in the Champions League? Also scored a brilliant goal, one of the best derby goals ever in Rome, for Roma against Lazio. A long time ago.
James, but, can I ask you, are Milan liable to taper off now, losing the derby match? And,
you know, it looks a bit that way. The thing is that Nesta's coming back now from his...
He's a huge loss in the derby game, wasn't he? Yeah.
I think they'll be all right, also because the level of competition's not that huge, but they're now tied with Roma in second place. Mm. I think that Milan will have enough to hang on to second. But it was interesting that Berlusconi, straight after they'd signed Mancini, the winger, said he's useless. So there you go. Berlusconi not convinced by that. And I have to say, Berlusconi's footballing nose is actually quite a good one. So,
do you reckon, yeah?
Yeah, Berlusconi's... I mean, this is another thing we touched on the other day, that Zaccaroni, who's now at Juve, won the title while at Milan. But most people would say it's actually because of what Berlusconi told him to do, that he was, you know, going about it all wrong until Berlusconi stepped in. I know I'm kind of buying the Berlusconi line on this, but he's had a good, great nose for players along the way, Berlusconi. Yeah. And a lot of people point to Milan's lack of dominance. You know, that the great Milan era kind of ended when Berlusconi went into politics and as such took his eye off the ball in quite a literal sense. Anyway, that's enough about... sorry, Barry.
He's always had a keen eye for talent in other areas anyway. Badum-tish.
Indeed. Indeed. Now, that's it for part two. Where are you going this weekend, Kevin?
I'm going to Chelsea versus Arsenal.
Are you? We discussed that already. Off.
Yes, we did.
Alrighty. John, what are you going to be watching?
Stoke Blackburn.
Are you? I didn't want to talk about that one. Barry, where are you?
I would imagine I'd be minute by minuting on Chelsea, Arsenal, and Birmingham Wolves.
Oh, okay.
In one of those marathon back-to-back minute-by-minute romps, which we all love so much.
Well, there are so many big games. Those are none of them. I mean, Chelsea, Arsenal, of course, but we talked about that earlier. Burnley, West Ham. Big game at the bottom of the table, eh? Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Hull against Man City, blah, blah, blah. Liverpool, Everton. That's what I was looking for. Hatton Bomb saying, we were very, very lucky, he's a Liverpool fan, to win at Goodison Park. But this is going to be a big test of how many corners we've turned, as Everton are in a very rich vein of form.
They haven't won at Anfield since 1999.
No. I mean, this does seem an opportunity, doesn't it? Yeah. Everton actually look, when they've got the players fit, they look more of an attacking team as well than they have been in the past. I think
Cahill, as Hattenbaum points out, is leaping up and heading home the goals again. But the last team to beat them was, in fact, Liverpool in that home defeat in November. Very fortunate one it was.
It's interesting. There's only 9 points between them, and Everton have got a game in hand.
Oh, okay.
So win on Saturday, that potentially is a 3-point gap, which is very little. Could Everton finish above Liverpool this season?
Wow. He really is a brilliant manager, David Moyes. You wonder how Everton have kept him for so long. I mean, it's the point will come when somebody will think he's a top four.
You'd imagine he might be the next Manchester United manager, perhaps.
One of a long list, but yeah. I mean, that's true.
Liverpool just 1 point off fourth place as well. And of course, there's a big battle in the race for fourth going on at White Hart Lane, where Spurs are taking on Aston Villa. Villa are 2 points behind Spurs, but with a game in hand. They do seem to come unstuck, though, against big opposition. Do Spurs qualify as big opposition?
I think they have to if they're fourth, don't they?
I think for Villa, like, is the forward line, isn't it? I mean, like, Barnhorst scores a few, but apart from that, it's down to Heskey and Carew. I think he probably needs another quality forward.
They've got this extraordinary record that they hadn't scored in, what was it, 5 games before last weekend, and then they got 3? They went 5 games without scoring a goal, and now they've got 3 in 6.
And they've got a terrific midfield, but sometimes that's not enough to score the goals.
Yeah, well, indeed not. Also this weekend, Sunderland-Wigan. Sunderland, of course, fresh from that 0-0 with Stoke, which many people said was the worst game of this or any season. I didn't see it myself.
I struggle to think of a worse game of football. It was absolutely dire, but at least Sunderland got a point.
Right.
I would be reluctant to say that they've arrested their slide down the table, but that's kind of, you say it's a big game, I don't know if it is. I think they're both a bit too good to get relegated.
Really? And, well, they haven't won.
I'm not saying either of them are particularly good. I'm just saying there are teams in the table that are worse than them.
Right.
Portsmouth have already booked one of the relegation places. It's two up for grabs, and I can't see Sunderland or Wigan bad enough to take either.
Wigan are only 1 point off the drop at the moment, although they have reinforced with the signing of Victor Moses. Sunderland, of course, bring in Benjani a day after everyone thought the transfer market had closed, because they had a certificate from an engineer saying that their fax machine was broken. Is that right, Barry?
Apparently the entire telecommunication system at the Sunderland training ground broke down, and they had to get... this is the second time, obviously, that Benjani's has been transferred late in a transfer window when he went to Manchester City.
Didn't he fall asleep at the airport? And this is
I think I have a vague recollection of something
his flight.
Which doesn't really bode well.
No.
So Sunderland got special dispensation to conduct the signing because they got an engineer to say that. It's bizarre. And just the very fact that people are still conducting business by fax. Like, who the hell has a fax machine anymore? Morrissey famously conducts all his... He doesn't use the phone, he does everything by fax.
Mm-hmm.
Which you would think...
Phil Collins as well, famously. Yeah. Said goodbye to Mrs. Collins by fax.
Yeah, yeah. Charming.
Charming. Imagine if his fax had been broken, they'd still be married.
Yeah. Well, he could have sent the fax, assume she'd got it. And if she hadn't, so he'd think he was divorced.
What happened with Sunderland, that they sent the fax and they thought it was all done, and it was only the next day that they discovered that...
Yeah, there was a paper jam or something. I don't know.
Well, there you go. They are taking on Wigan. Wigan have a rotten run of form. The Notts County defeat was their third in a row, so this is a good time for them to be playing. John, you're waving a hand.
Well, they've won 1-8, Wigan, in the league.
Ooh.
But in fact, so many of the teams down at the bottom are in horrible form. Hull haven't won in 10. Burnley haven't won in 12. Sunderland haven't won in 10. Mm. Sunderland have actually only got a point more than Newcastle had at the same stage last season.
Now, that's it then for Football Weekly Extra today. So thank you, John. You can take your pork stew out now.
Yeah, all the people from advertising, they clock off for lunch at 1 o'clock and they clog up the microwave, so I've got to go and streak down there. It's not actually that close to 1 o'clock. I just wanted to add a bit of drama to my lunchtime microwave.
It's a bit of a change. You slow cook it for 12 hours and then slam it in a microwave afterwards.
Yeah. So it's two stages
of
cooking.
It's all mixed up. Right. Barry?
Yeah?
And what will you be having for lunch?
Well, I've brought in sandwiches.
Have you? Yeah. What's in your sandwich then?
Cheese and ham, I think.
All right then.
But the thing, you walk around at lunchtime, you see people, they're very guardian lunches, particularly the women in the office. It's like they're trying to outdo each other in the who can bring in the most left field lunch.
What gets you points?
Well, the more shrubbery there is in it, obviously. Right. But it can't just be common or garden lettuce. It has to be really fancy lettuce. Or
right.
Chinese cabbage or lentil-y stuff.
Right.
Anyway, this is fascinating chat.
Right. Sean Ingle, the ringleader very much of this of this shrubbery-based mafia. Yeah. And Kevin McCarra. I bet you like a quinoa bean yourself, don't you?
Well, you've got the King's Place concert hall next door with kind of baguettes and nice things in there or something. A bit wonderful.
Near our launch pad. Yeah.
Spot who gets the big bucks.
Nice one. Well, many, many thanks. Listeners, will be back refreshed on Monday for our review of the weekend. Do join us for that. Many thanks for being with us today. Thank you, producer Pete. And speak to you after the weekend.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with SportingBet.com.